This podcast is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and for contact information on publicist Steve Joyner.
Ellie, today's guest, Sarah Alcorn of the Ivy League Murders, a podcast, is an actual private investigator.
I know. I might need to hire her for a case. It has to do with a book I'm reading, A Missing Person.
That must be an interesting book. What is it called?
It's about a boy in a ski cap and glasses who went missing. It's called, Where's Waldo?
I hope that she charges you the nitwit rate.
I was hoping the halfwit rate is cheaper. Fingers crossed. And let's find Waldo and teach him to dress better.
Attention, rebels of the Sure Pollution. Today's podcast is being brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/sherpa. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And now Mr. Bruce will lead you into the Sherpa Chalet.
As a reminder, although our Yeti is friendly, it is advised that you stay away from him if you are a Kardashian.
Welcome to Too Many Podcasts, the podcast about podcasts. Now, podcasting from the Sherpa Chalet on Mount Podcastia, he's your host, Jim, the podcast Sherpa.
Hey there, Rebels, and welcome to Too Many Podcasts. It's me, Jim, the podcast Sherpa. We are back for two more shows. It's Christmas week. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, yeah, sorry, wait a minute. Copyright issues. Sorry. Hello. You know, I know this show is for people who are new to podcasts or they want to check out different types of podcasts as well beyond what they're listening. So I know if you are new to podcasts, you will find out really quickly that true crime podcasts are a huge thing in Podcastia. And we previously had on the hosts of Morning Cup of Murder a while back. And it's a fun episode to check out. It's one of my top five episodes, as a matter of fact. And today, I got to talk to someone else who hosts another podcast. This podcast is called Ivy League Murders, and the hosts are Laura Rodriguez-McDonald and Sarah Alcorn. And unfortunately, Laura couldn't make the interview, but Sarah was my guest in the Sherpa Chalet, and she was a lot of fun to talk to. She is from Cambridge, Massachusetts, the home of Harvard University. And she, in addition to being a podcast co-host, is also a private investigator. So we got to talk a lot about their podcast, as well as the actual life of a private investigator. Really fascinating stuff. Sarah was a wonderful guest. Really grateful to have her on, and also much appreciative of Laura, who actually set up the interview. Like I said, unfortunately, she could not attend, and it probably would have been even more fun. I can picture these two hosting like a true crime TV show as an extension of the podcast. They were really great. So why don't I stop ranting and we will have a listen to my conversation with Sarah Alcorn of Ivy League Murders. Hello there, Rebels. We are in the murder mystery room and I'm glad I'm with the person that I'm with right now because now I feel safe. Her name is Sarah Alcorn. She is the co-host of the podcast Ivy League Murders. And yes, it's about murderers who went to Ivy League schools. And Sarah is also a private investigator. We're going to talk a little bit about that and the love of mystery. And we'll gossip about her co-host too, Laura, who unfortunately could not be here today, but we like gossip, right? How you doing, Sarah?
Doing great, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Welcome to the show. This is very exciting to have you. I like the premise of your show. It's so different. Now, you went to Harvard, right?
I did, yeah. I went to Harvard for undergrad. Very, very much an underachiever there, though, I have to say. And I was in there with giants, but I'm not one of them. So
it's okay. I know the importance of going to a prestigious college. I am a graduate of a prestigious clown college.
When I go to my reunions, I'm just so humbled. There's literally people there who started YouTube and are solving mortality. I mean, you know, I'm just like, yeah, I'm a private investigator, which is cool. I like what I do, but I'm definitely always humbled by that. So I have some pretty formidable classmates, is what I'm saying.
So now you and Lori, your co-host, you grew up in the Cambridge area, which is near the college.
Yeah, we did. We both went to Cambridge Ridge in Latin. Cambridge, as they call it, is the People's Republic of Cambridge, and it's a super liberal bastion. And growing up, I think part of what motivated us to do this is we really grew up in, you know, with Harvard in our backyard. You know, Harvard Square was our hangout place as teens. And so, but I think for a lot of people, the Ivy League is, you know, as exotic as a place like Hawaii. So that's part of the reason why we put this together, was to, you know, our whole premise is basically like somebody can be really intellectually intelligent, but emotionally not so much. And so we see that time and time again. And not everybody went to Ivy League. Some of the victims are actually from the Ivy League as well. So it's we're really trying to explore crimes in academia, crimes. We always think of privilege as being this bubble where things like that can't happen. So that's what we're looking into. And we're trying to just take true crime to a little next level and put a little bit of philosophy or history or literature in there too, because it is Ivy League. And that's our niche, actually, with the Ivy League murders.
I guess it's the same kind of mystique as like white people are so fascinated with celebrities. They want to know what happens when they're not in front of the camera. You know, all these scandals, people are drawn to it. And with an Ivy League school, and you know, you might see these captains of industry or tech giants or whatever they may turn out to be. You know, what's going on when they're out of the hollow
That's
holes?
Right. But they're not immune from human frailties, which are, you know, mental illness and drugs and alcohol and obsession and love and sex and money and greed and, you know, all the things that motivate people to make the ultimately bad decision, you know, of murdering somebody else.
Did you think that some of the people who had that kind of education, we'll say the killers, obviously, that they thought that there was some sort of an entitlement?
Oh, we find that quite a lot. And in fact, some of the subjects that we look at, for example, I'm thinking of Dr. Greineder, which is one of our episodes. He was an absolutely brilliant doctor, and he perpetrated a ridiculous crime. I mean, it was the sloppiest crime. And, you know, so it does go to my theory that some people can be very intelligent in certain categories and then just suck at committing crime, you know. And I do think there's a lot of like entitlement or hubris or whatever you want to call it, where they think like, I'm so much smarter than everybody and these blue collar cops will never be able to solve this crime. And it's like, dude, you know. You did a terrible job on the crime. Sorry, you know, very sloppy. That's one thing we like to look at. You know, there's a famous writer, Dominic Dunn. He really was fascinated with crime and privilege. And he has a great quote, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the exact quote, but that people are more interested in seeing kings fall than peasants, basically. And that's kind of, you know, or serfs or whatever the phrase is that he says. I just think it applies to this as well, because I think the presumption is when you go to an Ivy League, everything's perfect after that, right? You make six figures, everything's taken care of. And that's, you know, sometimes not the case.
You and Laura, you were both like longtime friends. And then I guess after a while, She went away to college, and then you'd reunite over a kitten, what I read?
We did meet over a kitten. So here's the story. I wish he were there. We my cat, Brutus, who I'm absolutely madly in love with and obsessed with, Laura and I went to high school together, but we went to an enormous high school. There were like 3,000 people in my class, and she was the class below me. She's younger than me, but don't remind her of that, because you know, really pulls a lot of weight with that. We didn't really hang out in high school. I kind of hung out with the track girls because I ran track, and she was in a really terrible crowd. Because, and I can say really things about Laura, right? Because this isn't being recorded, right? Oh, sorry. No, just kidding. No, I'm joking around. We just didn't really hang out in college. So in high school, rather, sorry. I found out that she had a cat who had kittens. And I went and I wanted to adopt a cat. And so we went to go, and I brought my daughter and we met the kittens. And I consider myself, Jim, the most like crime obsessed person I know. And Laura blew me out of the water. Her crime knowledge and her like crime, I call it crime head. I'm a total crime head. I met my match and some, you know. We had this kind of like fancy get to know you ladies lunch. And then we're like, do you want to go to that crime scene where, you know, it was like, yeah, I do. You know, we're both, you know, so we really connected on that. And Laura came up with the idea of Ivy League murders. We kind of stayed, we both had stuff going on in our lives. And I always listen to true crime podcasts, and we'll talk about that later because I have some of my favorite ones. But so we finally, just as the pandemic was hitting, we connected and started this. So, you know, we're kind of in the same bubble anyway, so it made sense safety-wise and everything like that. It's just been a wonderful thing to do, because I think without it, I probably would have watched and rewatched every single thing on Netflix. So I'm happy to say I didn't do that during the pandemic. I was too busy to work beyond this.
So she saved you from over binging.
She totally did. She totally did. Yeah.
Now, her family has an NYPD background.
So she married, her husband is Owen McDonald. And Owen McDonald, there's Stephen McDonald was a, he's passed away. He was kind of a hero cop in New York. He got shot at the age of 29 and paralyzed. And
he forgave his
as a full paraplegic. But the beautiful thing about Stephen was that he wrote books about forgiveness. He went and spoke to the young man who had shot him, who was just some 16-year-old kid, and he really spent his life talking to people about forgiveness. And at his funeral, there was, the Rangers went, you know, David Letterman went. He was very much, so Stephen, she married into a fourth generation NYPD family, basically. And they're all really good cops. Actually, Laura and I are now looking at her husband's grandfather, who solved a serial child rapist and murder case in New York. So that's going to be, even though it's a stretch from Ivy Leagues, that's something that we're going to cover, basically. So that's Laura's background.
Now, you are no slouch when it comes to investigating either, as you are a private investigator.
Yes, I am.
How long have you...
Jim, if I tell you, it's going to make me seem really old, but I'll say it. Okay, I've been a private investigator for 21 years, and I must be crazy or I must really love it, because most people burn out after like 5 years. They're like, I can't take it anymore. I really found my vocation in private investigation, and I just knew that I wanted to make my in my very cells, in my very DNA, is a fascination with crime and an absolute desire to solve puzzles and solve crimes. It has just been this incredible journey. I've worked on thousands of cases. I don't knock on doors anymore, but I've gone and I've spoken to so many people, so many different walks of life. It's like, it is the best education about other people and about seeing people. You know, oftentimes I got to tell you, I mean, I work in criminal defense, and you're meeting somebody at the very worst part, you know, point in their life. You know, they've hit somebody with a car, or they've gotten into a fight and the other person died during the fight, or that's what I do.
Did you ever have to do any like murders or anything like that?
I've worked on many, many, many murders. Yes. Some of them high profile in Boston, anyway.
Were there any tie-ins to any of the Ivy League?
Oh, you know,
cases or no?
No, actually, but I well, that's not true. I'll talk about a case that I worked on.
Okay.
And actually, it's a case that we will be covering in the podcast. And the guy's name was Dr. Richard Sharp. He was a Harvard-trained doctor who went to Harvard Medical School. And he was a dermatologist, a very, you know, had a booming business and a very contentious divorce with his wife, Karen Sharp. There was also a lot of allegations about domestic abuse as well. And just one night, Richard Sharp took a gun and went and killed his wife in cold blood. There wasn't any sort of the murder itself was just, there were witnesses. There was no doubt that he had done it. What had happened at that point, and I believe it was 2000, was the year that he killed his wife. What happened at that time was, after the fact, all these pictures of him, he was a cross-dresser. And so all these pictures of him, that was a sort of very press-worthy, like, you know, I mean, if you had the, like, New York Post, you know, caption, right. It was like, cross-dressing doc slays wife, you know, type of thing. And it's an interesting, what we kind of want to look at in the episode, and I'll get to my part of the case when, you know, in a moment, but what we want to look at a little bit in the episode is the changing ethos about gender issues and cross-dressing and that kind of thing. I don't think it would garner the same attention now somewhat. I think we are a little bit more educated as a society about, you know, just gender fluidity, and I think people are a bit more open-minded about it. So my part of the case was, after Sharp was convicted, he was accused of making death threats against the district attorney who had put him in prison. My part of the case, and I worked with this wonderful attorney, Janice Basil, what we had to do was do sound tests, because part of what the allegations were was that behind the prison cells, the prison guard had heard Richard Sharp soliciting this other inmate getting out of prison to kill this district attorney. So what we did was, this was Walpole Prison. They cleared out all the cells, and Janice and I did sound tests between the cells and in the back of the cells. And going behind these cells was one of the creepiest places I've ever been. If you don't think about, you just think about cells as being self-contained, but behind the cell, there are these passageways. There's like little crazy hallways with rat skeletons. And, you know, so we did this, and we kind of proved that even in an empty cell block, you couldn't hear very much from the back. And it was kind of a hollow victory, because Sharp was already in prison for life for killing his wife, and they had that conviction. But we actually won the case, and they couldn't prove. And the guy who he had allegedly solicited to kill the district attorney was kind of sketchy. And, you know, it was one of those, you know, he was getting all kinds of bennies for, you know, going to the authorities with this and everything like that. So that was a part of the case that I worked on. So I'm very good friends with the private investigator who worked on that case as well, who basically, and I asked him about it. I said, well, from a defense point of view, there's nothing you can do with this case. And he said, look, mostly what I did with this guy is just go and kind of hold his hand, and not literally, but, you know, the guy just wanted somebody to talk to, you know, and Sharp was jacked up on all kinds of drugs and alcohol. And, you know, he was out of it when he, you know, but also full of rage. And again, kind of untreated, he came from a very abusive household himself. And I think that just, you know, as they say, man hands on misery to man, you know, and that's what Sharp had done.
You are actually the first private investigator I've ever met. I'm curious, the way that private investigators are portrayed on movies and TV, is that a little bit exaggerated, a little glamorized? What would you say, like, with what you've actually done? I mean, you've actually handled a lot of different types of cases. How would you classify
I'm
that?
I'm probably not your typical PI. Your typical PI is going to be ex-law enforcement. Yeah, I think there more and more there are women who are private investigators. And I think it's an advantage to be a woman, frankly. And I think it's an advantage for two reasons. When you knock on someone's door, which is typically what a private investigator does during non-COVID times, someone's going to answer the door for me. They're not going to answer the door for some big, aggressive-looking guy. That's number one. Number two is I think women will talk to me generally because I'm non-threatening and they can kind of identify with me. Men will talk to me because they feel like it's rude not to. I mean, obviously, I've had plenty of doors slammed in my face. I can't believe you're here on behalf of those guys. Boom, you know, kind of thing. And it's actually really, it's really great to prep you for any kind of rejection you get. You're like, oh, please. You know what I mean? I've been rejected by the best. Go ahead, do your worst, you know. I'm older now, but I'm not bad looking. And I think, you know, that doesn't hurt in terms of at least getting men to talk to me. So frankly, you know, you got to use whatever you have, you know. Also one fun aspect of my job is I'm really good at surveillance and I'm very good at disguises. That's another fun, really fun thing to do because, you know, and believe me, surveillance is like 99% incredibly excruciatingly boring. I am not the most patient person in the world, and you are waiting and waiting and waiting. And then it's like 1% pure adrenaline of like, I've chased Porsches going 95 miles an hour on the highway. And I have to boast, I have about 100% success rate with surveillances. So I always get my guy.
All right. Since you mentioned it, what's the best disguise that you probably think you've used in your career?
What you have to do is it really depends on where you are. You just want to fit into the canvas of whatever situation you're in. I've been a realtor. I've been a pregnant woman. I've been a homeless person. I have been a jogger. I have been an old woman. I mean, you know, older, I should say.
Much older.
I have been, oh man. And it's so much fun. You just have that, you're playing a role. It's like acting, you know, I've been a totally, I don't even drink, but I've, you know, been trashed off my ass kind of thing. And that works perfectly because no one takes a drunk person seriously. I've been a soccer mom because no one looks at soccer moms. I've been everything under the sun. So that's a super fun. My challenge is my sister lives in California and she helps me co-write some of the episodes. She edits my scripts and that kind of thing, Margaret Weir. And so my challenge to myself is next time after COVID, when I pick up my sister, I want to do one of my disguises and see if I can fool her, you know. That'll be like the cherry on the
That's right. If you can fool your sister, then
if I can fool my own sister,
you can pretty much get away with it.
Like, I got it. You know what I'm saying?
What's interesting about your show is that, and even though I know you're reviewing crimes that may have happened a while back and sometimes cold cases, you and Laura don't always agree on some of the cases,
no,
do you?
No, we don't. We keep politics out of it, but you know, we're both kind of moderate. I'm kind of tend a little more to the left. I think she tends a little bit more to the right. I really don't agree with her on some things, but it gets salty sometimes actually. And we really disagree on some things as well, which I think it's good. I think it's good to have opposed. I mean, she's wrong which, you know, that, I mean, but it's still good to have that voice in there. So
it does bring a different element to the show, though. So it's not like you're both fawning over each other's responses.
Oh,
it's
no,
like,
I
well, wait a minute,
that.
What are you thinking here?
Yes, I know. That's my argument with a lot of things these days, whether it's, and I mean, not to get politics into it, but, you know, whether it's on the right or the left, there's no pushback at all, you know, from, you know, that's my kind of beef with things. It's good to have a little bit of discussion, argument, not to agree with it. And especially when you have something as polemic as a case and whether somebody is guilty or not guilty and the evidence, and just more fun to duke it out and see. That's what you do in trials, right? And that's the other thing. I mean, I work for criminal defense. I'm very proud to defend people because, to my mind, they've got the full weight of the police, the prosecutor against them. So they have somebody like their, you know, very badly dressed public defender, and then someone like me. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I work for great attorneys. I'm just joking around. They have their public defender, or they have their lawyer, and then they have somebody like me. So I'm their legs on the ground, and they can tell me, I want you to go and find this and that. And sometimes really you're finding evidence that's good, bad, or indifferent. And I mean, but it is, there are great police officers out there, and there's some really sloppy police officers out there. We just worked on a case where, a little complicated, but there was a witness who was key to my client's guilt. They hadn't even bothered to go and speak to this person. And I thought, what, how are you getting your case here? I don't understand it. You know, this is someone's life. This is somebody doing 15 years in jail. Go and at least find the witness and talk to them. Astonishing.
And this actually kind of ties back to what we were talking about before we started recording, about people being found guilty in the court of public opinion without, you know, people just point a finger and say, oh yeah, well, they did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Until you look at the full picture and understand all the parties and the alliances, and that's why our system is not perfect, but I do feel like we do have at least a decent system, because you do have those two opposing voices that get to kind of argue it out. And the best lawyers I know, what they do is they can take a complicated case and they make it digestible for a jury to understand it, you know, because people are just people. They tune out after a certain amount of time. And if the really good attorneys aren't in love with their own intellectual prowess and their huge vocabulary, they keep it simple. And I think anybody, you know, I think that's the best approach. What's funny, speaking of juries, is we can now speak to jury members after decisions have been reached, which we didn't used to be able to do. So some of it is like after the fact, going and speaking to jury members and finding out what their impressions were of the case, which is it's pretty interesting how people come to the decisions that they do.
Yeah, and especially with a jury, you know, you've got a room full of people, and are they all thinking the same way that I'm thinking? Do they see the crime the same way that I saw it, or is there?
I do, and I think in certain cases there are certain aha moments that can sway a jury one way or the other, and that's why I think you have to have the integrity of the evidence. You have to present everything, and to not do that is, you know, then you're remiss.
Okay, I'm going to make you think for a little bit.
Oh, please don't. What time is it? It's 9:39. Oh my God.
There's no math. I promised you no math, Sarah, so there will be no math. Okay, out of the episodes that you've done as a private investigator, were there any cases that you wish that you had actually personally investigated?
Well, one of our episodes, our episode 4, is the Jane Britton case. And that was a cold case that went cold for 50 years. And that's a case I would love to take and break apart. Namely this, Jane Britton was murdered in her Harvard Square apartment in 1969. In 1963, one of the Boston Strangler victims was killed in the same building. Laura and I found that out in terms of taking this case apart. And I would love more information about the person who ultimately got tied to the Jane Britton murder, because I believe he was sort of a protege of the Boston Strangler. And this is not national news. The guy who killed Jane Britton is a serial killer. He died in 2001, and that's maybe why, you know, there wasn't as much interest in him. But he had two other victims that we know of. I believe there are more victims of this man. And that is a case I would love to work on. Because I think we could possibly solve some cold cases by learning more about this man. And the man's name is Michael Sumpter. There's a book about the Jane Britton murder coming out in November by Becky Cooper, who is also Harvard class of 2009. Not to jump around too much, but Jane Britton was killed in January, I believe, in 1969. Then in February, or 1 month after the Britton murder, there was somebody killed with a very similar MO about a quarter mile from Jane Britton's house, and actually coincidentally right around the corner from the street I grew up in Cambridge. I would love to solve that second unknown murder, which her name was Ada Bean. And yes, so that's, you know, that is a case I would love to dig down deeper on. Michael Sumpter spent quite a lot of time in jail. He was furloughed at certain points, and I'd love to know if there's any DNA out there that matches his that has not been identified, or victims that have been identified. But they're old cases. That's the problem with these cold cases, is that, you know, 50 years had passed between Britton's murder and the solving of it. So, and that was purely ancestral DNA, the same way they solved the Golden State Killer case out in California. That was familial DNA that linked Michael Sumpter to Jane Britton's murder.
The two women that were killed by him, well, the one at least that was killed after Jane, was there any sort of connection between the two of them? Did they know?
No, not at all. And that's what's so difficult. A serial killer before DNA, the only thing that links those murders is this man's DNA. And he was just an opportunistic career criminal. He was a rapist and a murderer. And then from what we know about serial killers, it's a compulsion. And so this man, I believe he's responsible for more deaths. And I think if we knew a bit more about him, knew a bit more about his background, but nobody seems to be interested in exploring it. So I'm hoping this book that's coming out in November will shed some more light on it. So I'm looking forward to getting deeper on that case.
And you never know if there are families that are looking for closure if
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, I would love to solve a cold case and put some families' wound, help to heal that wound.
Because we are on a podcast about podcasts, I'm sure there are plenty of true crime podcasts and other kind of stuff that you like to listen to. So what are some of your favorites, Sarah?
Ivy League Murders, and then there's actually Ivy League Murders. No, I'm kidding. There's so many good ones. I love Criminal with Phoebe Judge. I think she's fantastic. There's like so many, True Crime Garage is amazing. I love Crime Junkies. Let's see, I love Red Handed. I just started listening to a new podcast, not new to me, Women in Crime, and we actually collaborated with them on an upcoming episode. It just came out today on Amy Bishop, and they are fantastic too. They're two criminologists. And they focus on, obviously, women in crime, and they kind of they're both psychologists as well, and so they kind of do profile. You know, they look at cases against women, kind of try to decide whether they've been fairly treated, and that's a very, very good one. They Walk Among Us, that's a British one. Love the guy's accent, and he does a great job. And God, I have just lists and lists and lists of ones that I love, and of course I'm blanking on all of them now.
So well, you gave everybody good samples. Well, that's okay. Just
mention a few.
Okay, so we have a portion of the show, and we call it shameless self promotion.
Shameless self promotion.
And this is where you can let everybody know how they can follow your show or what you've got on social media for anybody who's into true crime.
Sure. So can I shamelessly promote our podcast now? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Please do.
So our podcast is Ivy League Murders. And we can be found on any platform. We are on Apple Podcasts, we are on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, and we have now, six, we're really super growing. People love it. We have 150 five-star reviews, which we're super happy about. And if you want to find us on Facebook and join the group, it's Ivy League Murders. The best thing to do to help us is to subscribe and leave us a good review if you like what you hear. Tell your friends and tell your enemies and your frenemies. And also, we also have a website, which is ivyleaguemurders.com. And just reach out to us. We're always open to, we love interacting with people. We love hearing about crimes in academia. And we just love to hear from you. And yeah, just join the group. It's so much fun. I can't tell you. We just have a lot of fun.
It's always a mystery to be found somewhere, and these ladies can definitely solve it, I'm sure. So her name is Sarah Alcorn, and she is the co-host of the wonderful Ivy League Murders. Thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jim.
Be a rebel. Follow the show at Sherpalution on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And now it's time for Sherpa Suggestions.
For today's Sherpa Suggestions, you know, there's a ton of true crime podcast you can check out, but I definitely highly recommend Ivy League Murders as well as Morning Cup of Murder. I like to say it that way. I don't know why. Just don't ask me why. But you know what? I figured for today, since Sarah is a private investigator, I would actually give you a list of some podcasts that actually have to do with private investigators. So here we go. We have the Private Investigator Advice Podcast, the Without Warning Podcast, Verity Private Investigations Podcast, Cloak Investigations Podcast, Down Under Investigations. Yep, it's about Australian private investigators discussing surveillance investigations, Serving and Debt Recovery, Lee and Corey on the Case, PIs Declassified, One Tough Podcast with Bo Deedle, PI Magazine, the podcast, and My Favorite Detective Stories, and also Security Intelligence. Okay, so I guess that disqualifies me because the word intelligence is in there. Very special thanks to Sarah Alcorn of Ivy League Murders for swinging on by the Sherpa Chalet. Had a great time talking with her. I thought she was such a fascinating guest. And don't forget to check out Ivy League Murders with her and Laura. Hey, you know what? If you are listening to this in real time, you are 2 days away from Christmas. Uh-oh. What if you got to get some last-minute Christmas presents? You know what you can do? Go to my website, sherpalution.com, and there is a link to something that we call the Sherpa Shop. What is that?
It's over 100 websites where you can do some online shopping, get something for that someone special, or maybe even just treat yourself to something really cool. There's a wide variety of things that you can buy, and a percentage of what you spend will actually go to the charity Feeding America. So treat yourself to something special for the holidays and help a charity. Help feed people. Nice, right? Can't miss out. So, Mr. Bruce, I know we're getting ready for Christmas. We've got to hang the mistletoe over the yak. Why don't you show everybody to the door and I will make some Christmas cookies shaped like mountain lions. Okay, Rebels, we will see you on Friday with our guest, Catherine Brodsky. Until then, viva la Sherpalution.
Thanks for listening to Too Many Podcasts. Please disperse. You can go home now. I said you can go home now. Viva la Sherpalution. Viva la Sherpalution. Yeah, I'll come back now, you hear?